Hi, this is John Jackson Miller, and you're listening to the Star Wars Universe Show.
You should all consider yourselves to be in my power.
Hi everybody, and welcome one more time to the Star Wars Universe Show in English. Here is RS, your host. So, let's go to the second part of our interview with John Jackson Miller about the Knight Errant series. The comic series Knight Errant is going to be released soon in France. Could you tell us briefly about the Knight Errant series, please?
Yes, the Knight Errant story is set 1,000 years before the events of Star Wars Episode One. It is a generation before Darth Bane institutes the Rule of Two. It is a period in which there are many Sith Lords that have conquered the Outer Rim, and they are warring with each other. They're squabbling, and they are fighting with each other for the right to be the one Sith that goes and finally defeats the Republic. The Republic, in the meantime, has sort of fallen back to behind the barricades. They have fallen back to defensive positions, and they have withdrawn the Jedi from these outer territories, and they have left them to the whims of the Sith Lords that are out there. Our story is about a single Jedi named Kara Holt, who travels back to the Outer Rim. It was where she was born. She travels back to the Outer Rim with a group of Jedi to try to alleviate the suffering. All of her companions are killed in the mission. And she is left out there alone to try to decide what to do. The first comic storyline, which has the title Flame, is about her deciding what her mission should be. She is a character who is very driven. She is very determined. And initially, she believes that the thing that she must do is to, try to finish the work of her entire Jedi team and sacrifice her own life if she has to defeat a single Sith Lord. But as the story goes along, she realizes that she is not simply operative or agent out there for the Jedi. She realizes that by being the only Jedi out there, she is a symbol, a reminder that the Jedi exist, and that her focus really needs to be not so much on the Sith Lords, who are many in number and can rise to replace anyone that's defeated. Her focus needs to be on the people who are underfoot, the people who are being crushed by these warring forces going back and forth. So it's an exciting story to tell. And again, what we're doing that's unusual here is it's both a comic book storyline and a novel.
The Knight Errant series are a comics book, but also a novel. What is the difference between the two? Do they tell totally different stories, or are they complementary? Or is one the adaptation of the other?
They are completely original stories. The novel follows after the events of the comic story, but the reader does not have to have read the comics to enjoy the novel, or read the novel to enjoy the comics. It is just additional information. It's additional material if you would like to find out more about what life is like in this territory and what is going on. And I think it gives the reader a chance to, you know, the reader of the novel gets a chance to see what the characters look like in the comics, and then the reader of the comics gets to see inside the thinking of the main characters' minds. So they are two completely different stories, but they are complementary.
Okay.
After the books, the e-books, Lost Tribe of the Sith and Demagogue Journal, Knight Errant is your first real book set in the Star Wars universe. Was your writing experience on that book different from your comic books writing?
Well, certainly, the novel is, you know, many, many times longer than a comic book script, so it certainly required a different mindset. And as I've mentioned, many of the descriptions that normally, you know, the artist decides what things look like, I, you know, was fully the one that had to, you know, discuss what the characters look like and what the ships look like and what the settings look like. You know, that was entirely in my domain. But I did enjoy the fact that in prose I was able to talk a bit more about the history and I think some of the things that some of the fans would like to see more of in the comics, except the comics have to move fairly quickly, and, you know, we don't have a lot of time to discuss, you know, the politics of, you know, what is going on in whatever situation we're showing. You know, in a novel, you're able to tell a little bit more about the world and how things got the way they are. And so, yes, I think there are strengths to each of the media, and I enjoy being able to write in both.
What makes Knight Errant different from the Cotter series, as it's in the same era of the Old Republic? Not the same time, but it's the same era. So what are the differences between the two?
Well, I think the two main characters approach the world much differently. Zane Carrick was not a talented Jedi, and so he relied upon misdirection and trickery to succeed. And in fact, the entire series, I think one of the themes of it was that all of the characters were hiding things from each other. All of the characters had secrets. This is not the case with Knight Errant, in the sense that Kara Holt is extremely talented. She is very good at what she does. She does not like costumes. She does not like dressing up. She does not like using skills, you know, such as, you know, hypnotizing with the Force. Mm-hmm. She does not like doing anything that is not direct.
It's not tricky.
Yes, she prefers to use brute force. Mm-hmm. I think the trickery that is in the series is on the side of the Sith. It's on the side of all of these villains that we have, and so, you know, Kara is in the position that the reader is in, discovering things the same time. And so the dynamic of the two series is completely different because of this. There are surprises in both series. It is not the heroes that are hiding things from each other. It is the villains who are hiding things from the hero.
You describe Kara Holt as a character similar to Jeanne of Arc. Is her fate similar, or do you keep some narrative freedom? We will see Kara Holt on a bûcher. Comment dit bûcher?
Skater. We will see her burn at the end.
No, I think that I do draw a lot of my ideas from world history. My university work was in the politics of different countries, and I. Actually, most of my studies were about Russia, were about the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And I do draw some ideas from historical situations and historical figures. Joan of Arc, we have the warrior girl who is leading the battle. We do see that to a degree with Kara. but I think I also draw from other times as well. You know, certainly one of the themes that we have of this period is of the barbarian invasions coming against the metropolis.
English barbarians?
Well, it depends on where they're coming from. I think one of the things that I looked at is if you look at England during the fall of the Roman Empire, the English put up walls to keep the English barbarians from the north from invading. Mm-hmm. And that's what they had to do because the Romans were no longer there to defend them. That's very much what's happening here with the Republic. The Republic is no longer defending anyone, and so these people on the outside are left to these warlords that are coming back and forth and battling. So, yes, I think that this is a dark age for the Republic, and I think I did draw a lot from the dark ages of Europe, when their civilization was under threat by various warlords, and I think that's what we have here. We have all of these Sith lords who are battling with each other.
You do a little like George Lucas, who was inspired by a lot of history in the movies.
Yes, I think so, and I think what readers will find interesting about what we're doing is that because there are so many Sith lords, they are very much different. They have different views on what the Sith should be doing. This is a period where the Sith have not yet decided on their core principles. They have not decided on what Darth Bane determines to be, what a Sith lord should be. So we have a battle of ideas here between these Sith lords. All of their empires are slightly different or greatly different based on whatever their view is. We have one Sith lord who is in the series who, because Sith philosophy says that the individual should be glorified and everyone else should be subjugated, he takes from this that no one else exists, that he was the creator of the universe, that this is what he has in his own mind, that all of the universe is just an illusion and a game that he's playing, and this is how he structures his society. There are other Sith lords that have gone a different direction, and again, this is something that comes from my own studies where people spoke of in the days of the Cold War that there were all these different countries that were under communism. Well, the fact is that the communism was different in every different country. It was not exactly the same anywhere. Mm-hmm. The way that Russia was ruled was different from the way that China was, and Cuba and North Korea. These places were had individual cultures, individual personalities that made things different. And I think that people will enjoy reading this series because it is very much an odyssey. To go back to the Greek Odysseus, going from one strange land to another. Mm-hmm. That is what Kara does. She finds that all of these Sith empires are very different, and all of them are very bad, but they're if people are looking for Sith who are exactly like Darth Vader or Darth Sidious, that will not happen because those characters represent a philosophy that hasn't been fully formed yet. This is still the founding times for these Sith.
The new Sith Wars last approximately 1,000 years. How did you choose the year when the action of this new series, The Knight Errants, takes place?
That was a simple matter of I wanted to get a generation before the events of the Darth Bane novels. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be before the birth of Darth Bane. this goes back to what we were discussing about Knights of the Old Republic, in that by placing the series so close to the Old Republic video game, we raised an expectation in people's minds that we would write, you know, simply about that or primarily about that. In this case, I wanted to end the speculation right at the beginning that people would see Darth Bane. You know, this was not going to be a Darth Bane series, but it was going to be its own thing. That you know, another thing is, with 30 years in between now and then, the galaxy can go through many changes, and there is a lot of room to write about many big things happening without being concerned about getting elements the way they are in 1000 BBY, which is when the you know, those novels take place.
Will we have the chance to learn more about the Sictus Wars or the Mizra Battle, or other important events never told to fans?
Well, anything's possible. I do have a lot of you know, history that we do get into. I am careful not to try to tell you know, the entire stories of things that might be better off told by, you know, a story that is set in that period. For, again, the reason that I don't want to constrain a future writer by telling too much of some of those things, who might actually be setting a story there. It might even be me setting a story there one day, and I might want to make sure that I don't you know, put too many elements there that I'm going to have to contend with. That is another line that Randy Stradley at Dark Horse says, that when you define, you confine. Very frequently, if we try to tell too much of what is happening in times other than the time we're writing about, the exact day that we're writing about, we can, you know, limit some of our future possibilities by telling those stories ahead of time that would be better told possibly with an entire book.
It's better to stay mysterious and not tell too much about some stories.
Well, you know, part of the fun of writing in a shared universe is that we have different characters and different things that we can draw upon, and we can use some of the loose ends that are out there to inspire us and to get stories from. I've done the same thing myself. But it's important to, you know, tell your own story first and not try to tie up all the loose ends that are out there, because that can be limiting for the future.
We're going to talk about the future and what's going to happen after the Night Eren series. Okay. What do you have projects? And if yes, would you give us some information, so teasers?
Well, the first comic storyline, Aflame, ends in February. The novel is already out in the United States and should be coming out overseas soon afterward. We have not announced the specific stories for the future yet. We have said that there will be more Knight Errant material, but, you know, the actual timetable of future storylines is not for me to announce. That will be for Dark Horse to announce. Yes, there will be more, and I think that will be exciting to work on.
Okay, thank you.
As you tell the origins of Lost Tribe of the Sith, have you collaborated with the authors of Fate of the Jedi, where the plot also involves the Lost Tribe of the Sith to tell a current story?
Yes, in the very beginning, I was provided material from Troy Denning and Christy Golden and Aaron Alston, the writers of the Fate of the Jedi series. They had a lot of material on how the Lost Tribe operates, what the situation is like in the future where they exist, and you know, how they choose their leaders, and you know what the situation is. And they also had the very beginning, you know, mark the very beginning point of the story, where the spaceship Omen had crashed on Kesh, and so using that and talking, you know, with my editors about that, I was able to tell a story that brought them from that first moment closer to the way those characters are in the future. So far, there have been 5 of these stories that have appeared. 3 more have been announced. And we have covered already 1,000 years. And you know, the fun thing is the latest episode actually has a connection to the Knights of the Old Republic comics.
Oh.
And that was fun to be able to do. Each story illustrates a different element of what I was, you know, told about the Lost Tribe, and explains how they got that way. You know, there was clearly the fact that all of these characters were humans, when not all of the, you know, the Sith of that time were human, because you had the various people of the Sith species, and they were also Masasi warriors and various things. Where did all of those people go? That became a plot point that I resolved in one of the stories. It is a fact that some of the, you know, human Sith people who are stranded on Kesh end up becoming slaves of the others. That development of that slave class also became a springboard for another story. I think that that's been a lot of fun to tell stories like this. I think my inspiration has been Isaac Asimov's Foundation series, where he, you know, told stories about different groups of characters over a 1,000-year period, and I think that this has been an interesting story. And what's wonderful about it is free. These are free downloads for people to read.
The Old Republic has until now been your favorite setting. Have you ever thought about writing other stories in a different time period in the Star Wars universe?
Well, it's been sort of a coincidence that everything that I've written has been in this period, and it's not entirely everything. I've done a couple of other things. I did one issue of Star Wars Empire, and that was set between the movies, and then I also wrote a module for the role-playing game that was you know, set in that period as well. It's more challenging in some degrees to write in those times, because there is a whole lot of material already established and that has already been discussed. You know, I like the fact that you know, where I have been setting my stories, you know, to some degree with Knights of the Old Republic and to a great degree with Knight Errant, there's not a lot of mileposts to run into. There are not a lot of existing things out there to collide with, and so, you know, the picture that I'm painting is not filled in yet. Mm-hmm. And I'm enjoying, you know, filling in the painting, and I you know, hope that people are enjoying it as well, because you know, we really do have a particular freedom in storytelling that allows us to do quite a lot of different kinds of things when we know that there's not an appointment that you know, a certain character has to be someplace, or that a certain war will end at this time, or something like that. You know, we have a few more opportunities, and we have fewer boundaries.
I have the ultimate question. Will we see you one day in a French convention like Migène or QC?
Yeah, I have never traveled overseas, so that would be although I did live in Louisiana, so we had the Mardi Gras. I would certainly enjoy doing that. Again, who knows what the future holds? It is something that it's been an honor to work in the Star Wars universe, and I'm doing that. I'm also doing Mass Effect comics based on the video game these days. I'm trying to spread out and meet a lot of different fans, and that would certainly be a lot of fun. And fans can follow me on Twitter. My name there is JJM Faraway, JJM FARAWAY. And then my blog is farawaypress.com. That's FARAWAYPRESS.com.
That's great. Thank you very much, John. It was an honor having you to the Star Wars Universe show.
I appreciate it. This is the first time I've done a podcast in Europe, and I'm very happy to have made this the first one.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was an honor. And this is the end of our interview with John Jackson Miller. Thank you very much to my colleague Jeremy aka Bobby One, and thank you to Dolan Sacon, and obviously thank you to John Jackson Miller. And in the meantime, stay connected.
Don't fail me again.